are listening to The Caregivers with Lon Kiefer.
Hey there. Yeah, you. I'm talking to you. You might be a caregiver. Hey, I don't know. You might not even know. Welcome home to the Caregivers Podcast, where you are never alone. My name is Lon Kiefer, and I am a caregiver, and I'm also your host. And in some circles, I'm known as Doc, the defender of caregivers. For those of you that don't know what we're doing here, we're talking to the caregivers of the world, whether they be professional or personal family caregivers, in an effort to make certain no one is ever alone on their caregiver's journey, even if your companion is just a voice on the podcast. So today's episode is pretty exciting. I'm not going to do I'm trying to shorten my lead in, so I'm going to be really short on this one. This is a gentleman that turned his personal caregiver experience into a love for music into a just downright a movement, and I'm going to let him tell you about it. So please welcome to the podcast and enjoy this episode with Vince Zangaro.
Vince Zangaro, thank you for being on the Caregivers Podcast. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm excited. Our mutual friend Gary Joseph LeBlanc put us together, and I'm a big fan of his, and he's a big fan of yours, by the way. And again, thanks for being here. One of the things that I say in my Defender of Caregivers mission is honor yourself as you care for others. So please, if you could honor yourself and your mission before we share with others, tell us about you, where we can find you. Go at it. Just promote yourself.
Okay. I'm Vince Zangaro. I am the Community Outreach Director of the Dementia Spotlight Foundation and the founder of Alzheimer's Music Fest, which was founded in 2013. Our main goal is to give free respite care, resources, education to the dementia community in large. And now we're doing that in Tampa and also Atlanta, so we're pretty happy with it. As you said, Gary Joseph LeBlanc is our education director, and Whitney Oldman is our CEO.
Yeah, well, you guys are doing some great things, and you're doing it through passion, but you're also doing it through music. I mean, what a shared experience for all of us throughout our lives. It's such a music touches on emotions, and you're using that to bring people together, and it's fantastic. And the idea of respite, oh man, respite is so important for family caregivers and professional caregivers to sort of have a trial of, how can we work together to best. And it's, I'm a big believer in what you're doing. How did you get into all this?
I was a caregiver for my father. I like to say care partner because he worked just as hard as I did. For 14 years, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's at 62 years old, so early stage or early Alzheimer's, onset Alzheimer's, and I was 29 years old when that happened. So, it was a lot of, I was pretty still a selfish kid and, playing music a lot and touring and also working, and kind of my whole world kind of came to a halt, and we lived in ignorance for a long time for the first several years until we couldn't anymore. And then when you really get into this, you realize how many steps and how you have to transform yourself as a person to care for someone else. And how that loved one is also caring for you at the same time as you're there caring for them.
Oh, man, you've thrown me so many questions just in that sort of opening comment. Let me jump on the word ignorance. I would never call you or anybody ignorant, but did you intentionally use that word or did you mean denial?
No, I mean, I think it wasn't denial. I think it was ignorance. I think, for me anyway, I'm not going to say this about other care partners, but, my grandfather had Alzheimer's, but we didn't know much about it.
Sure.
At the beginning, we thought it was, oh, dad's going to forget some stuff. That's all Alzheimer's is. And once you live through this and you get into, unfortunately, dad and I had 14 years, and for the first 5 years, we really understood what this disease was going to be, what this disease was going to have in store for us, and we had to find the beauty in the disease, which was a very hard place to get to. But once we did, that ignorance did go away, and then the knowledge started coming in. And that's when I said, hey, I want to do something about this. I started looking at other nonprofits. I wasn't really finding anything that was helping directly to families, and that's when I kind of formed Alzheimer's Music Fest and worked with several others. Now, you know, with fortunately the help of my partners, Gary and Whitney, with Dementia Spotlight Foundation, we are really on a mission. And between all of us, you know, between Gary, me, and Whitney, we probably have over 40 years of being care partners and caregivers.
Yeah, I know Gary had a similar, I think his was close to 14 years, and then he had, I think, maybe a year and a half, 2 year break, and then his mom, he reengaged with his mom. And and I mean this as a compliment, so don't take it any other way, but you have an interesting and provocative use of language. You use beauty when you're talking about something that most people would be afraid of and maybe use ugly for, and you used ignorance for the learning curve that you went through. I love your perspective. I mean, you seem like a guy that's gonna, you know, whatever's before you, you're gonna tackle it.
Well, you know, fortunately with, you know, Pops is what, you know, my dad's nickname always was with Pops. You know, you learn a lot, Juan. I mean, as you know, yeah, you've done this show for a long time, and you know, it's hard to navigate at the beginning, and it gets scary. And, you know, you have to find the beauty in what you are given. I mean, and I did, I found, you know, when dad got to this form where he was kind of living in between. Do you know what I'm saying? He was kind of in his old reality to his new reality. And once he kind of transitioned into his new reality, which was very innocent, right, he was my father, but he was also, I felt like my son sometimes. I always respected him as my father, but you do almost take on kind of a son role or daughter role, depending who you are as a care partner. And it's a best friend. And you also, when my pop lost his verbal communication, you have this vocabulary with each other that is nonverbal, that is almost just very insightful and intuitive, and it's very beautiful. I've never had that communication with anybody else besides my good buddy, my bird. We have a pretty good one, but he's pretty verbal, actually.
Is that Chappie?
Yeah, that's Chappie, yep. And so he was definitely my dad's second caregiver. Unfortunately, my wife came in the middle of our transition that we were going through, and she thought I was some rock star with tattoos and piercings, and I was playing in a band, and then she kind of found out what my life really was. And she didn't run off, and she stayed, and she's a special needs teacher now. So even she was always a teacher, but she just transitioned to special needs, because I think with caring for Pop, you know, I think she found things within herself. She was very selfish, and now she's on her mission and what her perspective is.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on finding some balance and a life, you know, of your own in the middle of, well, heck, this is all just beautiful anyway, right? No, I'm being facetious by saying that, but really congratulations on finding some balance and some you in all of this. I started chuckling when you were using the word beauty again, because I mean, I look for the humor in things, because there ain't nothing beautiful about me. So it is, and you talking about that nonverbal, I mean, you made the point earlier that, you know, that the person you're caring for is also caring for you. And that's a great perspective, because, you know, you're not in charge of these things. You're just the one doing a lot of the work. And,
Well, I think, you know, what I mean by that also, you know, like I said, I was 29. I was going down a road where maybe I was drinking too much, partying, being a music guy, and that all had to end, And also he gave me an insight about life that I don't think a lot of people get into their older years. And he gave that to me at a very early age, when it really hit me when I was about 32, where I looked at the world very different. I looked at, just drama and things about life that really doesn't make any sense. That's not really what life's about. And he gave me that gift, and I can't thank him enough for that.
Yeah. But it definitely grow you up quick, having the kind of young adulthood that you had and the responsibilities that came to you. And so was your dad into music as well?
No one really. I mean, my mom, you know, of course, vinyls. I still listen to vinyls and collect them. But, you know, my mom was always playing it. It's just something I came about and did when I was a very young person. I started writing songs. And, you know, I did that very young. I started when I was in, you know, I don't know, fourth or third grade playing piano. And just I still do it. And I've had some ups and downs in the music stuff, some successes and stuff. But, you know, with caring for my dad and kind of working Dementia Spotlight Foundation now, we've all been able to kind of, I feel very blessed because I've been able to put all of my passions together throughout, you know, yeah. Respite, Alzheimer's, Music Fest, and then education and just knowledge. And I think it's, I don't feel like I work a day in my life just because I'm so passionate about what we do.
Well, that's fantastic. I love when I hear somebody like yourself that found a passion, whether it be music or art or what have you, and it comes out of nowhere. I mean, my family is very musical, and I have zero musical ability. And so I found my path, which was, you know, no skills at anything. But you really found yourself in that you weren't just picking up something that was in your family and it was sort of expected of you. You found it, and now you're finding a way to use it to serve other people. So good on you on so many levels. When you started to reach out, was your journey with your dad already over and you had time on your hands and wanted to find a way to serve, or did you start it while you were still engaged with your dad?
Oh, no. Yeah, it was about 6 years after dad. I guess dad was diagnosed. It was 14 years ago, so we're looking at 2004. I started the fest in 2012, so probably right in the middle of that.
Yeah.
I'm just one of those people, and I was feeling very isolated. I didn't understand, especially at my age and that time. There was not much out there, and I couldn't, you know, I was just like, man, I can't find a community. At that time, there wasn't many support groups. But now, you know, now it's a little bit more visible, but we have a lot of work to do. I just had to do something about it. So I knew the music scene in Atlanta, and fortunately, you know, some of my friends have done really well in music and made a, you know, this is what they do for a living, and they all helped out. We just started local bands, and it started growing from there.
So you're using the music festival to raise awareness and money, and I'm sure, you know, other avenues, but I want to give everybody a chance to hear how they can become a part of what you're doing, whether it's on the side of, you know, supporting it, or whether it's on the side of coming to the festival or benefiting from the services, the respite that you offer.
You can go to DementiaSpotlightFoundation.org or AlzheimersMusicFest.org. Dementia Spotlight has most of the resources on there. The fest, of course, is more of our event that we throw to do the fundraising. Right now, we're offering respite in Tampa and Orlando, Pinellas and Pasco County. And in Georgia, we're offering it in Cherokee, Cobb, and DeKalb County. Of course, we want that to grow through the years and be able to, you know, handle all both these states, and hopefully we'll be able to do that in the next few years is what we're hoping for.
And what are, you know, I don't want to dabble into you having to give up anybody's, you know, personal business, but do you have a recent success? Because I have some amazing success stories of respites that I've been aware of, but...
Oh, yeah, I really do. I go out there. I try. I can't meet every family, but I try to meet as many as I can. And I got to tell you, one of the best things in life when these families actually get someone on the phone. And, you know, and Gary and I are both really good about just getting our cell phone numbers out to call us anytime. Right. And just to see how it can really transform their life, even getting, you know, which we offer $500 for throughout a year. But even that $500, how far it can get, just the family and just the breathtaking, you know, reaction from them that someone's actually out there caring. It's pretty amazing, and it's hard to explain in words, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I've just had amazing experiences with respite. People go in and they view it as a you know, a sort of a necessary evil. They need a break, and they'll give it a try because they just need the break. They've got a vacation that they've planned or something, and then they just have an amazing experience. I mean, it doesn't always play out that way, but it does far more than most people would expect.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. Like, it took me a long time too, and sometimes when you first start this, it is a hard transition. I know it was hard for me and my dad. It was like, no one can take care of my dad like I do. And, you know, again, that goes with financial, you know, your financials go down quite a bit when you take on that role because you can't work as much as you used to. You do kind of side jobs to keep the funds coming in. You know, fortunately with my dad, he was making, you know, $2,000 something in retirement a month, and that helped a great deal, but it was still kind of a household at that point of $3,000. So, you know, we went through everything. You know, we lost the house, we had the downsize, all those things that you think, you know, you'll never be part of, but people really don't realize, you know, and then you get so isolated. And when that isolation starts, that's when you can really dig yourself into a rabbit hole. So I think that is the most important part about respite care, is to get you out in the world a little bit. You know, I use mine normally a lot of it. I did it about, I could only afford, you know, about two times a month. And again, I couldn't take, you know, I was offering this program, so I couldn't take advantage of the program. That would be kind of a conflict of interest. So, you know, it was one of those things that I really, and then she, you know, Essence was our care, and she stayed with us for over 7 years. And just that two times a month was just, it was good for dad. It was just good to kind of, you know, you want to keep it consistent in your environment when you're dealing with dementia and the diseases under dementia. But you also, you know, you want to shake things up again. I'm sure, you know, he got sick of looking at my face, and he flirted a lot with us too. I think he was still, you know, even when he was nonverbal, he still could wink his eyes, and he had those bright blue eyes. So he never lost that part.
They say they're always in there somewhere.
I truly believe that too. And, you know, when people, you know, people get so tied, and I know it hurts because I get it. When it's hard for me to even think that way anymore, but I know it hurts sometimes when, you know, there's situations where they forget that you're, you know, that you're their son or daughter or wife. But in some ways, when you just, they always love you. It might not be categorized in that role anymore, but there was never a day I didn't know my dad completely loved me and knew who I was. He just didn't know if I was his son. He just loved me. It was just pure love.
Yeah.
The roles go away.
Yeah, the words might not have been there, but the emotion still was. So the next music festival is in March at some point, right?
Yep, we're doing March 14th. We're doing an education event on March 13th, which will be right before that. And you can go on our social media, again, Dementia Spotlight Foundation or Alzheimer's Music Fest. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that fun stuff. And then you can go to our website, and it'll have all the information there. And it'll be at Skipper's, and we have Reverend Horton Heat and the Intimate Solo Performance headlining, and then Trey Pearson, T-Stones, and we have about five other bands on there also that are really good local talent. So we're pretty excited. Ticket sales are going well, and this will be our second annual one in Tampa. And then we are partnering with Live Nation out in Atlanta for our next one in Atlanta, which will be September 12th. And I can't release any more details than that because this is going to be some pretty big bands. So partnering with Live Nation is kind of a big deal. So we'll make that announcement, hopefully April 1st.
Wow. This is amazing. I am so humbled when I end up talking to folks like you all. And, you know, I've been referring to myself for many, many years as an advocate. And honestly, it just pales in comparison when I see things like this. And it, you know, comparison is, you know, it's the thief of joy, but, I mean this in all, you know, I mean this joyfully. I'm glad to see that there are so many people out there doing so many things like this that are creative and I only hope I can help, get the word out. The podcast it comes out on Fridays I mean, it's obviously we're not recording this on a Friday, but it comes out on Fridays because the idea behind it was, you know, TGIF, well, I'm a caregiver, you know, Friday's just like another day. So the idea was that if the podcast comes out on Friday, there's something for caregivers to look for on a Friday. But on Mondays, it is rerun on Radio St. Pete, and which is, you know, a neighboring town to Tampa. So hopefully I can, you know, get you guys some exposure on this. Not that you need it. I mean, the tickets are growing.
We always need exposure. You know, we always need exposure. There's still plenty of tickets to be sold, but we really appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to put that on my calendar. Maybe I can get down there.
Yeah, and this is really, you know, and if you've never seen Reverend Horton Heat, I mean, he was really big in the 90s. It's kind of almost kind of, yeah, just great. You need to Google that, but a lot of people do know who he is. So just an amazing guitar player, amazing performer. So we're really fortunate that he did Atlanta last year, and he's doing Tampa for us this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember seeing him on Tonight Show or something at one
time. Yeah, he was like on, yeah, he's been, yeah, it was back in the 90s. He was really big in the 90s. And he's still out there touring and doing great stuff. So it's really cool when you start contacting these musicians to come aboard and they all get together, and especially the local bands, you know, they are always out to help a cause. So we just always rely on that music community and to bring their supporters and then hopefully touch the dementia community and get the word out there. And hopefully we'll raise a lot of money for respite care because it is growing out in Florida. So we really do need those funds to help these families.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people want to help, you know, these big names, people want to help. I'm amazed at the, at some of the names that, I mean, we haven't gotten all the dates and times together, but some of the names of people that are willing to come onto this little old podcast, mostly in the comedic world, that I'm tapping into, but, you know, you can't go very far in your life without finding somebody that's been affected by dementia or Alzheimer's disease. I mean, and they want to do things. So, and your first, you know, your next successful event is only going to leapfrog you into the next one to follow.
Yeah, we hope so. Yeah, it's going to be working that way.
So, yeah.
You know, the one thing it is, especially, you know, when you've been a caregiver for a long time ago, there's a certain amount of work ethic that goes with that that you don't shut off. And I know Whitney, Gary, and I, and all these, you know, many caregivers that I talk to, they all have this around-the-clock kind of work ethic. And so when you put that towards your passion, and, you know, Dad passed almost 2 years ago in April. It was right after his 75th birthday. It was 76th birthday, actually. So, you know, I just, you know, all of us, and again, Gary has lost, and Whitney has lost, so now we just literally, we can't stop working. This is all we know, and so we just put all that towards this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I talk to Gary, you know, probably every other week, and, you know, I keep telling him, to be honest with you, you know, I want you to slow down a little bit, buddy. You're involved in so many things. I mean, I don't want the message to be slowed down, but,
Gary needs a vacation.
Yeah, yeah.
He does. We'll talk to him about that one day, but he's a pretty big workaholic. I mean, we are, you know, it was weird. I took my first vacation, right after, you know, probably a few months after my dad passed away. It was almost overwhelming.
To be on vacation. Yeah.
You don't know what to do with yourself. You almost feel guilty that you're out there. Yeah. You get flashbacks of being a caregiver. You want to be there. You're still frightened. I wouldn't call it post-traumatic stress disorder, but there are things after being a caregiver that happen. It took me a year to get over some of the phobias, and I still got some of them now, but I just had to fight it, you know, battle to get through it. And it's a big world out there, and when you get used to that little bubble you create for your family that's nice and safe and consistent, when you go out in this big world again after, you know, 14 or how many years, it can be a little overwhelming to you.
Yeah, it's like re-entering a world that moved on without you for a period of time.
I swear, man, I went to a store and asked for where their CDs were, and they looked at me like I was like on crack. I was like, what? Where are the CDs at? These young kids were looking at me like, what? You have better to get vinyl than CDs nowadays. You can pick up your vinyl anywhere. But yeah, when you ask for a CD, they were just like, what are you talking about?
Vinyl's definitely made a resurgence, but if you missed the whole CD thing, you were you were a little more isolated than even I would have expected.
My wife too. She was cracking up. I was like, and I still have a problem streaming music. I'm like, honey, can you put on Pandora on the? Like, I'm better at it now. Like, I'm good at certain technology, but I like to hold something. I'm a musician, so you know that's why I collect vinyls. I like to hold a case. I like to see stuff. I like to find new music, and it's almost a little overwhelming with everything streaming. And I'm also a music advocate, and you know these poor guy people out there trying to survive off these streaming services. Unless you're that one in, I'd say one in a billion, you know, you're not going to be making a living off of music very much. It's hard industry to. Make a living off of.
Yeah, it's truly a shame because I tell you, music is it has value at so many different levels. I mean, entertainment value, but the therapeutic value, and you know, there's you probably know the science better than I do. There's certain aspects that you know of what we retain and what we lose through the journey of dementia. Like I know that like light green, for example, is one of the last colors that you can hold on to. But apparently, music is able to you know get through you know through all phases just about.
Yeah, music transcends. Like it doesn't go away. That's one part of your brain. The music it never goes away. So it is very it's very beautiful. You know, it's just. And, you know, of course, just being a musician, I still go in the studio and record a lot. And so Dad was always around music, so that was really awesome. And I wouldn't say my music's very therapeutic. You know, I'm not a music therapist. You know, I'm definitely more, my band sounds like, you know, violins and horns and banjos. It's a pretty big, loud band, but he really enjoyed being around it.
Oh, I got to hear you guys. My wife, Vicky, is in a duet, and her partner is, you know, a acoustic guitarist and writes some of his own music, but his wife is a violinist, and I kind of hired my wife and him for an event that we had. It was, you know, hired with finger quotes, but she came along, and I'd never heard them. I mean, they're great, they're good, but they were phenomenal. And I went to his wife and I said, how do you know all this? I mean, they rehearse all the time and they play out all the time. How do you know all these songs? And she said to me, she said, you're not a musician, are you? And I said, oh, hell no. She goes, I don't know any of these songs.
Just doing a lot of improvising.
Yeah. She was just feeling it and going. It was just such an amazing addition, to get a violin in there.
So, well, you know, improv, and anyway, you know, even in the comedy world, right? So you look at it, my band does that very regularly where, you know, we only do originals. We don't do covers. I'm still that kind of 90s punk rock mentality. And I just don't enjoy playing covers. That's not why I got music. I love bands that do it. They're very talented. That's just not my thing. But, yeah, you improvise a lot, and that can go good with anything in life. Being, you know, when you're living in years with dementia, you're improvising constantly. Something else is going to come up, and you're going to have to figure that out. So I think all those tools go hand in hand with being care partners and being musicians, comedians, being anything in life to be able to improvise. I think it's a really good talent to have.
Yeah. Well, you definitely have to be on your toes and improvising throughout. I mean you know, you're finding all these parallels in your life. I mean, it's really beautiful. I'm learning to use your words, but to be able to serve people and your dad's legacy and your learning curve, what your you know, pathway through ignorance into sharing this with the world and using music as the vehicle is it's really fantastic. We're not that there's any hard fast rule here, but we're getting pretty deep into the podcast, and at some point I usually ask my guests and I forewarn them ahead of time. This is where I'm going to ask you to consider coming up with a "you might be a caregiver if" statement. It can be serious, it can be funny, it can be improvised completely if you'd like. But do you have a "you might be a caregiver if" statement that perhaps describes you and your journey or something you learned through this process?
You might be a caregiver if you're happy being isolated. That's kind of a sad, depressing one, but it does
come off.
That's a big thing, I think, with caregivers is finding a way not to be so isolated. And I was fortunate enough to start the fest when I was feeling that way, that I found I got to see a community going around it. And then, you know, started sharing, like I wasn't a big Facebook guy, and then, you know, started sharing our journey on social media and that, and, you know, it was, we got very fortunate that that isolation was uplifted. You can't, and even to this day, you know, I'm out and about all the time, but I still kind of miss that. I'm a very people person. I'm always out. I'm very sociable. But I miss just coming home and sitting and having my space. And I think that's something that happens to all of us as we grow older. But I think that's something you're not prepared for, maybe at my age anyway, you know, when I went through it.
Yeah.
So I feel that's very important to put out there.
Well, I mean, I use the term that, you know, you're an introvert that's masquerading as an extrovert because you're very social and you're out there, but where you get your energy and where you get your peace is you have to withdraw every now and then. And, you know, being a caregiver is isolating. And if you're good at that, here's an interesting twist. I have a neighbor who's a social worker, and he and I both are good at being alone. And we've told each other at times where the only problem with being good at being alone is that you get better at it. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, so pulling yourself out of that, I like the way you said that. Cause you've got to find peace with being alone, but you don't want to find too much of it.
No, people need other people in most cases. And I think, you know, we thrive off of each other's energy. And I believe in general, most people are good. You know, I like to think that way. I don't know if that's a true statement, but I hope so. The world I live in, they are. And, you know, my dad and, you know, what I do for a living in this, I get surrounded myself by people that would just give the shirt off the back to people. And I feel very blessed to be able to be around that group of folks in the world and universe.
Yeah, I mean, it's we definitely are put here to be social. I mean, it's good to be able to, you know, nurture yourself, but you need other people. I'm trying to think of who it is that is famous for saying it, but, you know, they say that your personality is the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. And also, your number of intimate friends, close personal intimate friends, is a greater predictor of your emotional and physical well-being as you age than anything else. And, you know, I'm sure you and, you know, Whitney and Gary have developed a friendship through this passion as well. So there's a secondary benefit of this.
No, very much so. And I knew Gary a long time before, he came on board, and he was one of the first person, you know, people I called when dad went, he was ready for hospice, and God bless him, he lasted 18 days in hospice, but Gary gave me some good pointers because he knew how passionate I was, and I remember one thing he told me, he was like, do not get mad when your dad, you know, I like to say transitions, but passes and the hospice company comes out and starts taking the hospital bed. All that stuff, they'll be out there the next day. Do not go off on them. Do not get mad. Other people need this equipment. I remember him telling me that, and I'm glad he did, because I would have been dead. I would have been dead.
Yeah. Give me a minute here, right? Yeah.
Like, give me a breath for a second. And then, you know, and there's this wonderful company we work with out here that refurbishes medical equipment and gives that to families for free that we work with out in the Atlanta market. And, you know, these people need the equipment. So, you know, and it's expensive. And in many cases, people don't realize that insurance isn't going to cover this in many cases, whether that's home care, whether that's equipment, it's not going to be covered. And, you know, it's a sad thing. My dad had great insurance, but most of his stuff was not covered at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we would have put him in a facility, everything would have been covered. But at home, yeah, which doesn't make any sense to me, but, you know, what do I know?
Oh, no, it's maddening. I mean, you know, one of the, one of my biggest focuses on a fundraising activity that I tried to do was, you know, I had a, I don't like the term follower, but I guess that's what it was. I had a follower of Defender of Caregivers, and she took care of her son who had cerebral palsy. And, you know, she needed like a $2,000 lift, the kind of lift that every nursing home has hidden in their shower rooms that they're not using, because they got 20 of them and they don't need them. She needed this lift at home to continue to take care of her son, and nobody would pay for it. And so a $2,000 lift is the barrier between, you know, a year in a nursing home for a gentleman that's in his 30s times another 30, 40 year lifespan. You know, this is a, you know, a $2 million issue that could be solved with a $2,000 lift, and nobody would pay for it. It makes no sense.
It doesn't, but, you know, all we can do is try to do what we can do, and right now that's what we're trying to do, and hopefully, you know, I can see with the team we built, and it's very important to me that people live through this as a team member, because it's hard. I really think it's hard to help folks and caregivers and people living with dementia if you haven't lived through it. It's very hard to understand. Yeah. It's like anything. You know, you can't be mad at people. I mean, people are going to lose friends through this journey, but they're not, their friends are not going to understand in most cases. In some cases, they're going to lose family members. And you've got to let go of the hate, because I would not have understood this if I didn't live it. And it, you know, but now that keeps me open to anybody. You know, it makes me a very good listener to other people, what they're going through, and very empathetic to what other people are going through. So that's, again, something my dad passed on to me that I got at an earlier age than most do, and I feel very blessed because of that. And it makes your life so much fuller and richer when you don't just think about yourself constantly and what benefits you. I think one of the best things in your life is to give back to others, because that's going to fulfill you even more than any kind of materials you can get in the world. I truly believe that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, exposing yourself to, you know, other experiences and perspectives. You know, you had mentioned Gary had forewarned you about the, you know, packing up the equipment and don't get angry about it. I don't for a minute think that my relationship with him influenced that perspective, but I know sometimes as he and I are talking, he'll slip into, you know, the community didn't do this, or the facility didn't do this, or what have you. And I'll bring the perspective of having been on the professional side of things, and we'll have this sort of little awareness moment with each other, and we both come away from it with a greater perspective. And, you know, hopefully then we both are going out in our own ways and sharing that with other people. And, you know, you got to touch the flame. You can't tell a kid that, you know, the stove is hot. They got to go touch it. But they're quicker to react and put it in perspective when they finally do touch it by hearing these experiences. So.
Yep, and I actually did that when I was a kid. And I never touched that stove again. So there you go.
So we've now proven that perspective is fun to have, but at some level, advice is worthless until you experience it yourself. But before we end up wrapping up, I am going to ask you, not yet, but I'm going to ask you to start thinking about it. I'm going to ask you before we close, what advice would you, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your own caregiver self when you realize that, oh, wow, you know, I'm not just a son here. This is, you know, when you get through that ignorance and you come to the awareness that you're on this journey, I'm going to ask you, what advice would you give to yourself? But before that, I want to ask you again, you know, how can we find you? How can we support what you're doing?
Yep, DementiaSpotlightFoundation.org is the best thing. It has the respite care on there, the education event. You can sign up to our newsletter. That is a great resource. Also, all the social media. You can go out to Dementia Spotlight Foundation. and find all that. Alzheimer's Music Fest also, if you want to pay attention to the event, now that we're doing two times a year, and hopefully we build that. And all that will be right there for you. And then you can always email me with any questions at vince@dementiaspotlightfoundation.org anytime. And I'm really open with it, too. And if anybody ever just needs to reach out and call me, I'm very open with it. My phone number is 770-547-3244. I don't mind doing that, putting my number out there, because, to be honest with you, we all need to talk to someone. So I'm always there for that also. And, again, you know, I think through this, there's no experts in this field. There just are not. But we all learn from experiences, and I think we all learn greater from each other than we do from anything else. So I think other care partners and caregivers, if they can just go to support groups and talk to each other, can learn so much more from what other experiences are going out in the world. And I think that's the best education you can get.
Yeah. And the other thing I like about what you're doing is that, you know, I really get upset sometimes with the internet and some of the things that go on out there in the world. It's a big world. It's not necessarily a scary world, but sometimes I get annoyed by things that can go on the internet and social media, but this is a great use of that. I know you guys are building a following and, you're on Facebook with the things that you're doing as well, and I'm just a big fan of what you're doing, and I'm grateful on a personal level that you and Gary have developed this relationship, because I know this has been very grounding for him. We joked about him needing a vacation and what have you, and I know that it is kind of a semi-vacation, some of the work that he's doing with you guys, because it sort of gets him in that sweet spot between workaholic and isolation, and he gets to socialize with somebody he cares about and a cause he cares about. So
we love the big lug. So yeah, that's the one thing. Gary and I and Whitney, we always have to kind of tell each other, okay, even during the holiday this year, you know, me and Gary got so frustrated because, you know, my wife actually had 2 weeks off because she's a school teacher, and we weren't able to do it. No one was doing anything. We're like, why is no one doing anything during Christmas? We can't get anything done. It almost forces you to take that little bit of time before all this start comes. So I think it's very hard for people to realize that, but we do really try to be there to support each other as much as we can.
Well, that's a consistent theme with, you know, I always talk about caregiver personalities, and that thing that you're describing right there is a consistent thing. And I don't know whether that's nature or nurture. Like, for example, the personality that's predisposed to needing to always be active and feeling productive and feeling like they're contributing and giving back, you know, do they step into the caregiver role? Because when you were a 26-year-old or whatever, I can't remember the exact age when this, you know, came to your doorstep, you could have said, screw it, I'm with the band, you know. I mean, there's no requirement that you did what you did. You know, you stepped back into your family life and took care of your dad. And
well, you know, it was one thing. My mom, you know, she passed around 55, way too young. She had rheumatoid arthritis and heart attacks, and all the medicine they were putting her on, I think, again, over medicating back then was kind of a common practice. I think that's probably what got her. But, you know, she asked me to watch after her dad. And to be honest with you, man, I had a good family. They were great to me. Not a lot of people are blessed to have that. And it's a big Italian family. I mean, you don't have to be Italian, but that's what we did in our family. Yeah. So it was not, I didn't even look at it. I mean, it was a choice, but I just didn't even look at it quite like that. I don't know. I just thought that was the natural state of being, I guess. And I'm glad.
Well, but I emphasize that it is a choice, even if it's not a choice. I mean, you never viewed it as a choice, but truly it is a choice. And the reason that I bring that up and the reason that I stress this is because if there's anything I can offer to you on this call, you've offered a great deal to me and the listeners, but by acknowledging that it's a choice, you should be able to give yourself freedom from guilt. Because having made that choice, you're stepping into something that is inherently impossible to do perfectly or sometimes even well. And for having made the conscious choice to try something like that, you shouldn't judge yourself based on what you perceive as a failure in doing it. If you don't,
no, I think you're exactly right. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think, you know, it took me a while, but I think I almost could think about it a little bit more after that transition. And when I was going through, like, did I do everything to my best of my ability? And I was okay. I felt like, you know, there's mistakes I made. Of course, we all make them through this journey. But, you know, I felt like I did it to the best of my ability in most cases. And if I messed up, I learned from that mistake and it was improved, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, it makes great sense. So what advice, and again, you used the word ignorance, then you, as you went through that, you found beauty, all of that sort of thing. I talk about awareness, acceptance, and allowance, because a lot of us are in the full front, you know, we're fully engaged as caregivers, but we still think of ourselves just as a son or as a spouse. So when you have that moment of awareness that things have changed and I'm a caregiver now, if you could go back in time and talk to yourself, what advice would you give yourself in that moment?
Yeah, I think the major thing with me was, and I got this in about the middle of it, probably 7 years into it, is there is an instance that I was trying to kind of keep Dad in the world that we all live in. And when I started living in the world he lived in, that's when we found the beauty that I talked about earlier. That's when we found our space in life. Not trying to force him into this chaotic world we all live in, kind of live in his world for a while. And to be honest with you, his world was pretty nice. He wasn't worried about politics. Dad wasn't worried about any of that.
Yeah.
He was a very innocent, the way he was with Alzheimer's, he was in just, this is, every family's different. You meet one dementia family, you meet one. But, you know, he was very innocent. I would say live in his world. Don't try to force him to live in your world. And I think that's when we found our happiness together.
That's great advice. I love what you're doing. I hope on the Monday following, whenever this goes live, that, you know, the people out there with Radio St. Pete, neighboring Tampa, find you and your cause and your festival, and they support what you're doing. There's a lot of beauty that it's you know, for a guy that really had a lot of tough years, and don't deny that they're tough, because
believe me, but there were times I was on the floor crying and Dad was cursing, and you know, but yeah, believe me, it's not, you know, it is a very hard path that you're going to go on, but you do the best with the hand you're dealt, and you've got to kind of, like, as a comedian and something, you know, that you've got to find, and especially comedians and songwriters do this, that they turn their pain into something beautiful. And
that is
a common thing with artists, and that's just the way my brain is wired.
Well, you got a beautiful mind. I thank you for your time today and for what you're doing for my friend Gary and for and through the Dementia Spotlight Foundation. And Vin Zangaro, you might be a caregiver. Thank you.
Thank you, Juan.
So there you go, folks. Another episode of the podcast. We all have unique caregiver stories, and I hope you're enjoying hearing some of them here on the podcast. Thanks again for listening. Please leave us a 5-star review. And most importantly, please share this with others that you think might benefit from these caregiver stories and the Caregivers Podcast. Okay, everyone, go out there, do what you do, be good, and honor yourself as you care for others, because you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring. Bye-bye now.